Philosophageal. What about that?
Philosophical.
It's about the philosophy of your throat. Philosophageal.
An ode to your throat.
Yes. On throats. Wow, this article is very philosophageal.
Okay. All right, let's go. All right, I get it. Okay, I just had to. Philosophical. Okay. Let's try again. Take two. This could be a couple of times. Now just chill out and no dancing. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In today's episode, we are going to be diving back into a philosophical conversation while I do an additional research for the last of our true crime episodes. Today, we are going to be doing a little bit of epistemology, that is, interrogating what it means to know, and also how we know. Mark and I will chat about belief versus knowledge, the debates around some scientific knowns, religion, and other tangents. We know we may offend someone who thinks 1 + 1 = 2 is more of a suggestion than an ontological certitude. But sorry, not sorry, we're Gen X. We got our sensitivity chips later in life, and we're still learning how to use them. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Mark.
Oh, what's up?
What's that?
Oh, fellow babies, what's happening?
Do you recognize this that theme song?
This is our extemporaneous, Gen Extemporaneous After Dark. Available only on Skinamax.
Available on Patreon, everyone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So just cost you a measly latte a month.
$5 a month will bring you three, up to three, maybe more, actually.
Why not more?
Extra.
At least three.
Extra episodes.
Not up to three. Up to three could mean zero.
That's right.
Nobody's going to want to pay for that.
Yeah. Well, it's at least three.
Yeah, at least three.
Additional episodes of content.
Look.
God, I'm sorry.
There's more content, okay?
And that content.
It's more than zero content.
That content includes Video Thunderdome.
Which you love.
Internet Archaeologists.
I know you love Video Thunderdome.
Or extended conversations about
episodes
that
right?
we've previously done that yeah. we didn't get to dive into too much. So if you can, please come and follow us on Patreon. So we're at patreon.com/GenXtemporaneous.
That's where I would put it.
Yeah. That's where I would put it. Okay, Mark, this is really going to be another one of these philosophical chats now.
Well, you know, I love those.
The idea came to us because of a kind friend of the pod.
Yes, that's correct.
Friend of the pod, Samson's mom, sent Mark a couple of books.
Yes.
Her father was a philosopher. He was a professor in philosophy. And so,
which makes him way more qualified for this particular episode than me.
Even more so because one of the books that Samson's mom sent Mark is called Knowing, Essays in the Analysis of Knowledge. And it is a collection of essays, an anthology.
Wow, that's the best kind.
That is correct. And we are going to use one of the essays that was in this anthology to sort of provide a little bit of framework for our podcast, this episode. And it is our way of saying thank you very much to Samson's mom for thinking of us and for being a friend of the pod. Let's do this. The last time that we did a philosophical episode, we had a lot of great feedback on that. Do you remember which episode that was?
Yes, that was our ethics episode.
So our episode on ethics was episode
80.
If you are interested in philosophical discussions, you can go back right back to episode 80 and hear another one. All right, so tonight I'm going to kind of hand the reins over to you again because, of course, you are
that's
one
a huge mistake.
With the deep knowledge. I know we wanted to talk about a couple of things, but why don't you give a little bit of a background instead of a hot take on the whole thing? Give us a background on
Epistemology 101.
Yeah.
All right. So
briefly, though.
While I do talk about it all the time, let's be honest, I took philosophy courses in between fraternity parties and soccer games. So, and it didn't rank in the top two of those. Let's just say that. All right. But we love philosophy and we love discussing it. So epistemology is really just a study of how we learn, what is knowledge, What is truth? How we gain knowledge? What qualifies as knowledge? If you're talking about knowledge, you're probably talking about epistemology. That is to be distinguished from ontology, which is really things, I call it things that are true by definition. Not all philosophers call it that, but that's only because, you know, they haven't read my stuff yet. But it's really the things that are true by definition, where we break things up into categories. So for example, the species, genus, family, etc. of animals, those are ontological. That's ontological knowledge because we created the definition, right? 1 + 1 = 2. Is ontological because we've defined 1, we've defined plus, we've defined equals, and we defined 2. It's necessarily true. It's going to always be true under that definition. Epistemology, on the other hand, is things like, do we know what gravity is? Do we know that the sun will come up tomorrow? Do we know that humanity is doomed? Things like that. Those are the kind of questions that epistemology is particularly well suited to handle. And scientific theory, for example. That's probably the most useful branch of epistemology. It's what qualifies as truth. Now, what kinds of things do you think qualify as knowing something?
All right. So when you said that there are things that we know are true, ontologically true, because we define them.
Yeah, they're true by definition.
Okay. Right? So you're saying one is one because we said that's one.
Yeah, we all got together. We were like, what do you guys want one to mean? One. Now we know what one is. It's true by definition. Mathematics is true by definition.
Okay. Right?
We defined what a plus sign means. If you don't have those definitions and you just showed somebody 1 + 1 = 2, there's no way to determine the truth value of that.
See, what's tripping me up here is your use of the word definition.
Now, it is the curse of all philosophy that it comes down to fights over definitions, right? It's just basically nitpicking. It's linguistics. It's
semantics.
Semantics. It is. A lot of it is. The famous Bill Clinton, right? It depends on what is, mm-hmm. right? What you mean by is. Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, we mean the verb to be. That's what we mean by it. Well, but do you? I feel your pain. I feel your epistemological pain.
But you said, you know, sort of the categories that we put animals into.
Right.
Well, that's by definition what they are. But did the definition get imposed upon it?
Certainly. So all categorizations are at root artificial.
Okay. They're, so then how can they be ontologically
because they are based
certain?
Because we've said, here's what we mean by bear.
Oh, well, we've said it, but how, I mean.
And we all agree that's how the language is being used here. Nobody's confused when someone says.
But it's not intrinsically then something.
No, that's correct.
It is, one is intrinsically one, would
right.
you say?
No, it's one by definition. We've decided that that's one. Here's a better example. Is 10, 10? That's the one and the zero, right? That's a 10. We all agree that that's 10. It's one more than 9.
Yeah.
Well, not in base 5 it isn't. In base 5, it's one more than 4, and that's 10.
But that's what I mean, though. So it gets funny when you really actually hear the word, well, by definition, it is those things.
Sure.
And if it's a certain, there's got to be like a...
You
like
think
a,
there needs to be a something in the real world that it's anchored to.
Well, I just think that it has to be intrinsic to it.
Well, it doesn't, though. So let's look at it this way. Logical truths. Mm-hmm. Are really true by definition. So if you say all men are humans and all humans descended from apes, then the truth is at the end, the conclusion is all men are descended from apes, mm-hmm. right? That's just logically true. But that's ontological knowledge because we've all agreed on the definitions of those things. Now, there could also be evidentiary knowledge, truth on that or associated with that. There could also be evidentiary truth associated with that. Well, we've done the biology and we do know that our definitions of humans as great apes is accurate, etc. Mm-hmm. But I mean, great ape doesn't mean anything without our definition of what we mean by great ape. And you can't just put a human next to a gorilla and say, well, it's self-evidently true that they're cousins. Well, it's not. They look significantly different from us, but we've decided in our classifications to group them together because of certain genetic similarities, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by ontological truths are true by definition. Mm-hmm. Math, logic. With logic, it's really we can't conceive of truths that violate logic.
Well, let's go back to this ape and man now, because there are some people that still do not believe that that's true. However, go back before the scientific revolution, mm-hmm. and people may have said, well, that, you know, that look, ooh, they look similar or whatever. And maybe somebody questioned that on some level, but no one was saying, bring those two things together, you're cousins.
So that ontological truth did not exist before the classification occurred.
Right. But to them, there was an ontological certitude. And that was what we disregard today because we have had the scientific revolution.
Well, it's not an ontological certitude because there were no definitions that...
No, what I'm saying is, okay, so maybe I shouldn't use ontological certitude. What I can say, though, is that prior to the scientific revolution, people took as fact mm-hmm. religion, sure. religious explanations.
An epistemology allows for people to be wrong, right?
No, but the definition was there, and there was no... So what I'm saying is that when then another better definition comes along... then you might change the definition. We might change our understanding. So what was at one time, and take it out of the religious factor, if there is something that at one time was described, had a different definition, had a definition, and then it, when you learn more.
Sure. If you change the definition, the relation between the definition and truth can change, right? So right now, we have a definition for what we mean by human. Maybe we meet a species at some point in our history, in our future, that causes us to change that slightly. You know, mm-hmm. what if they're like us in many ways, and they're also different, but we're going to call them all humans. Well, then you've expanded the definition, and then that changes, you know, the way we think about those things. But that doesn't mean that you were not ontologically certain at that time, because we know what the operational definition was at that time. Mm-hmm. Ontological knowledge isn't really that meaningful, in my opinion, because it's just true by definition. Mm-hmm. It's trivial. You can stand up and proclaim 1 + 1 = 2, but nobody's going to be impressed by that because that's just true by definition, right? You haven't discovered, the source of the Nile or life after death or anything. You just followed the definition. You followed the cookbook of mathematics and you came up with the answer. It's a tool in the search for truth,
yeah.
right? Definitions, theories, all those things, mm-hmm. but it's not truth. It's not knowledge in the sense of epistemological knowledge, right? It's not knowledge based on, observation in the world and a theory that turns out to work. And we could talk about, the shadings of all the kinds of things that we call knowledge, because mm-hmm. it's pretty loosely defined in general practice. Mm-hmm. We always say, well, I know that bitch was cheating. No, you don't know it.
Well,
right?
Okay, let's get into some of these questions now. Let's get into this idea of knowing. So as a point of academic honesty, I want to share that the essay that we're going to be basing right some on. Of this on is in the book that I mentioned earlier, is A.J. Ayer. Mm-hmm. And it is called Knowing.
He is a giant.
Knowing as having the right to be sure.
Yes. I agree with that.
Okay.
By the way, he didn't like us to call him AJ.
What did you like?
Mr. Ayer. Professor Ayer.
Did you know him?
Dr. Ayer. No.
What the hell?
I think he died before I went to college.
Well, you said it so convincingly. I was like, wow. So no. So I'm not going to give a synopsis of the article, but I'm just sharing that is the article. That's one of our sources for where some of our conversation comes from.
Okay. Well, so Ayer was a logical positivist, which we will discuss at some later time because that's not like a simple thing.
Yeah.
So, but he is a giant in the field of epistemology. Mm-hmm. So the first important thing to establish is, what do we mean when we say somebody knows something is true? What qualifies as, I know that's true? Well, there are a few things that are necessary. First, the thing has to actually be true, right? You can't say, I know that 2 + 2 = 5 and say that counts as knowledge.
Right.
No, it does not. It is your incorrect opinion that it is that, but it has to actually be true. And it doesn't matter how controversial the subject is, you can't know something unless it's actually true. You think you know something, but you don't know something.
Right.
All right. So it has to be true. The second thing is, you have to be sure that it's true, mm-hmm. right? I can't just say, I don't know, square root of 17 is, I don't know, like 4-ish, whatever. But you can't just say, I don't know, maybe it's 4.167777 repeating.
Yeah.
And if that ended up being right, okay. But that doesn't mean that you knew it. You didn't know it. you suspected. You may have had a weak belief that it was true, but you have to be sure that it's true. In fact, the way I put it is you have to have a strong belief that it is true. Unshakable, really. Mm-hmm. All right. And then the last thing is you have to have justification for that strong belief. Mm-hmm. So let's use the example of Christina and I are playing cards. She looks over at me. I haven't made a bet. She didn't cheat. She didn't mark the cards or anything. She goes, "You have aces." You may feel certain of your knowledge. Like, I have a strong belief that you have aces. I am sure of it. And it may even be true. I look down. I'm like, motherfucker, I got aces.
But I didn't know it.
That's right. I'm like, is she cheating? Well, that's because of the one last requirement is you have to have good reason for that knowledge to claim it to be knowledge. You were right, but that's not enough. You have to say, okay, well, she knows it because she saw the reflection of aces in his glasses. Mm-hmm. So those are the three things.
I think that there's still ways to pick that apart.
There absolutely is. And here's the embarrassing truth here is that it is not black and white.
Right, because what is, justified?
Right, like, just
what,
ask me.
What is that?
I'll tell you.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So
just appeal to my authority. Well, and then that's where the arguments take place, right?
Right.
And it's important in philosophy to kind of distinguish between like rigorous philosophy,
right,
where words are and definitions are extremely important, and then casual usage. Because we'll say things like, I know, when we really just mean I kind of think it or I believe it.
I mean, if you really wanted to be very precise.
Right.
And I've seen you do this. I've actually, it's so interesting when we have these conversations because some of the way that we interact, and it's not that we interact with each other, but I see you interact sometimes.
Spying on me?
It's online. And I've seen you say to people just that. Well, they'll say, I know X, Y, and Z is happening. And you'll say, no, you don't know it.
No, you don't.
You don't know that.
You don't know dick about epistemology. Your epistemological approach is lacking.
Everyone, when you encounter Mark on the Twitter sphere or on Facebook,
just block
now
me.
You know that when he says to you, you don't know that, he's trying to make some kind of philosophical smart point.
Exactly.
And then you just tug on him, grab him by the throat and say, Mark, tighten up. We're not just going to get down to the semantics of your philosophical musings, man.
I mean, that's just like your opinion, man. The dude abides. The dude, by the way, does not have a strong epistemological base.
No,
all right?
But sometimes, I've asked you this before, your precision.
My worldview?
Yeah, to have all of this precise, like very scientific, very provable, all of that. The way that you organize your world.
Is it annoying?
There's so little room for magic.
There is room for magic, and they're in the books that I read and the movies that I watch.
Right, but in your life, you don't experience much except for on a page.
Do you know why? Because it doesn't exist. Like Larry Potter isn't out there.
Larry Potter?
Yeah, unlocking locks with a wand. I always call him Larry Potter.
Oh.
What's up, Larry Potter?
No, but I just feel like you're missing out on something special in the world.
Well, yeah, like misinformation and unjustified beliefs.
Let's talk about religion.
Sure.
Let's start there. Because
sure. So in your epistemology, one of the things you want to decide is how do we get knowledge and are there different kinds of things we allow to count as justifications for our beliefs?
Mm-hmm.
And we've decided, there are ways that we can justify our beliefs in different sources.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the strongest, or if not the strongest, is empirical data.
Yeah.
Right? I saw it. I measured it with a stopwatch. I know that it happened. Several people double-checked me. I published my results. They all looked at it. They agreed with the way I did my stopwatch. That is good, rigorous scientific knowledge.
Yes.
Then there is what we call revealed knowledge.
Yes.
And that's just somebody telling you something. Right. So if my dad says, hey, you're not getting your allowance this week, that's revealed knowledge. I don't have any evidence that that's the case, although on Friday, I suspect I'll find out because apparently I fucked around. when Friday comes, yes, then the truth of that statement can be proven. But initially, I still believe him, right? Mm-hmm. I still think that that's true, that I'm definitely not getting my allowance this week. Mm-hmm. But I only know it because somebody told me that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the weakest ways to get knowledge because, of course, people can be wrong, right? And there's no independent objective standard that we're really measuring it against for the most part. But most of our knowledge is revealed knowledge. I learned this because I went to school. I didn't actually do the experiment myself. I read about scientists who did it.
Yes. Well, let me bring something up. So Air says in this article that someone would say to him, how far away from Earth is the sun? Well, I think it's 90 million miles, he might say.
93, yes.
And then the other guy says, well, no, it's not. It's 40. Then he goes, well, no, that's just... that's not accurate. It is what it is because that's the knowledge that has been revealed to him.
Correct.
And he has to trust in that knowledge because he, of course, can't do all of the, he doesn't have the empirical sources or empirical materials.
Like you don't have the math.
Right. Yeah. But he just believes that it's true.
Yeah.
And then he, then they do a discovery that there's been some kind of great big error all along.
Yeah, the sun is really 40 million miles away.
And then he has to correct that. And that revealed knowledge now becomes something else that people are assured is more accurate in whatever way that's disseminated.
Because when you're getting revealed knowledge, one of the things you want to do is check the source. Is it a good source or is it a bad source?
Okay. So from a religious perspective, now you recognize before that prior to the scientific revolution, the world was organized around religion.
Sure.
And they used religion to coordinate their lives. That they understood how things worked because of their religious beliefs. They have very clear understanding. In those days, there may have been others, and there were, as a matter of fact, Galileo and Copernicus and others who didn't see what the majority saw.
Right.
And started to question what the majority was seeing. They were the larger in number, though, the ones who believed in the religious, so they were able to kind of keep that squashed. To them, in religion, their sources to them were as real as any empirical sources as we would believe scientific sources.
Right.
So for them, it's the same kind of certitude in what they believe.
It was just not justified.
Retrospectively, because they didn't know what they didn't know.
Yeah, they failed. They really failed primarily the first test, which is it true?
But what we believe now is as easily destructible as
it's
that.
Not.
It's
destructible. It's not as easily destructible because we have countless independent objective observations backing up many of our
much of our knowledge. To them as long as you possibly can.
No, I don't.
It's forced from your cold, dead hands.
No, that's false.
So you
don't understand
a world where some other shift could happen.
Neither can you.
I certainly can. I'm imagining it right now.
All right. Tell me about your new world.
I don't know what it would be.
Then you're not imagining it.
No, I am. I'm saying that the possibility of it exists. I imagine that it can exist. I haven't sat down and thought about what would look like.
I can imagine that there are worlds different than what we live in, right? Where gravity is less or the seas are made out of mercury. No. I mean, I can imagine all that stuff.
I'm not imagining a totally different world. I am imagining the possibility that something that happened here where all of the things that we're talking about existed, DNA mm-hmm. existed years before we knew it existed.
It did. That's correct.
Right? So it existed. All of the things that we have now existed then. They had a belief system, and the way that they set it up, it was as accurate to them as what we think about science today. Science gradually came along and chipped away at everyone's belief system.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Rightfully so, we would say. And now we have what we have. You discount the fact that there could be somebody who goes and finds something and proves something?
I don't discount the fact that that scientific theories can change. But let me give you, talking about the difference between the religious worldview and the scientific worldview, let me quote the great philosopher Ricky Gervais. Okay? If you burned every Bible and wiped that knowledge from the face of the earth, let's say there was a nuclear disaster and all the Bibles and everybody who knew about the Bible died. In 1,000 years, humanity would not recreate the Bible. It would be some other kind of religious belief. It would not be the Bible.
Oh, right.
But
yeah, you're right.
If that happened and all scientific knowledge was destroyed in 1,000 years, it would come back. It would be exactly the same as it was before. Because those truths are not dependent on revealed knowledge, on telling stories to each other, or somebody having come down from the sky to tell you what's going on. It's gained through experimentation, observation, theorizing, etc. That's the difference.
I don't disagree with that, but I am saying to you, I have to allow for the possibility, because I'm telling you, no one would have imagined the paradigm shift. It would involve an entire paradigm shift.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not saying that they're bad people, although many of them were. but I'm just saying that the way they knew things is weaker than the way an empirical worldview knows things.
Okay, what if there's now then proven an even stronger way?
Maybe there could be, in which case I'll be like, you know what? That way does work better. Let's adopt that way.
You're actually agreeing with me now, because you're saying there could be a point. This is not just where
there could be.
It could be better. And you're assuming that you would carry all of your same standards for scientific proof over into the new paradigm. But
not necessarily. I mean, I could, again, to. I allow for the possibility that there are things that I don't know. I think there's a very few things.
Oh, you can't know that.
You can only believe it or assume it or whatever, but you don't know how much you know. Right? Because you don't know the sum total of all knowledge. We understand that. And we also know that the body of knowledge for the human race changes over time.
What if it changes even more and like super radically?
So let's say that
you have to allow that could happen.
Of course it could.
Because it has happened in the past.
Of course it could.
The possibility for it to happen is there.
All you have to do is show me that it works better.
And then what we feel so certain that we know right now, we may not know.
You're absolutely right. Here's another way I would look at it. If you believe religion is true and science isn't, you should never get on a plane. Because we know that when we get on planes, they're going to leave the ground and we'll land safely. For the most part, of course, horrible things can happen. Or don't use a cell phone. Because that cell phone does not exist for any reason other than scientific theories said this, this, and this will work, and now we have cell phones. Mm-hmm. Science works. Religion, it may even be true, right? All religious belief may be true. Let's say Zoroastrianism, right? Let's say that's true. They got it right. But Zoroastrianism can't create a cell phone, a plane.
Well, I mean, hey, if you would say then God created man who created a cell phone.
Sure, but you didn't use religion to create the cell phone. We didn't just get some parts together and pray over it and sacrifice
magic.
A calf.
That's magic.
No, I'm talking about religious rituals, right? Those didn't create cell phones.
If you were a deist, a higher power created everything.
You absolutely can argue that.
So there you would be, and I know you're going to say but you're wrong, but let's talk about this. I think that a lot of people, most people probably, try to incorporate whatever the religion is, if they don't have one, if they do have one, whatever their religious belief is, they try to incorporate it into this world where science is king. Yeah, is the leading authority.
And a great example of that is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church has, at least in the last 100 years, has tried to incorporate scientific truths into their theology. They will say, yeah, we see no inconsistency between our beliefs and the theory of the Big Bang. They were willing to take a more symbolic approach to the Bible. Mm-hmm. Certain things definitely happened for them, right? Jesus happened. Jesus came back from the dead. Definitely happened. Mary was the Virgin Mother. All those things happened. But they're willing to take a little bit more of a mythological approach to the origin story of the universe,
okay,
for example.
Well, but here's where I wanted to go with this thing about religion, that there are people who recognize the scientific world, mm-hmm. understand the paradigm has shifted, but want to challenge now science. And they will believe most scientific things, but then you put something that's, you know, like legit scientific, provable and all the rest, like the earth is round in front of them. And they say, no, it's not, it's flat. And we did an entire episode. I think, in fact, we probably had 2 episodes on flat earthers. Two and three, actually, I think were flat.
Some of them legit believe that the earth is flat.
And they do.
And they reject. But here's the interesting thing. They don't wholly reject science or the scientific method. In fact, if you remember when we were watching that documentary, they did an experiment at the end mm-hmm. to try to prove their theory. It's just, I mean, they fail on truth, right? They fail on justification for their strong belief. Mm-hmm. All they've got is a strong belief, which is not knowledge, right? That's just a belief, and it happens to be a false one. But it's interesting to see that scientific method is such a powerful tool that even people who are rejecting well-accepted scientific knowledge appeal to scientific method to try to prove their point. So they said, let's do an experiment. Well, guess right. what?
And then the experiment
That's science. Well, and then the experiment proved that the Earth is actually round.
Right.
And they, of course, rejected it, but you know, that's just their imposing their prejudices on the data. And humans are extremely fallible. So you know, we always allow for that. Things that we think are true now, we'll later discover that they weren't. And it turns out you didn't have knowledge. You just thought you had knowledge. I think we at least agree for the time being, scientific knowledge is our most reliable path to knowledge, to true knowledge, right?
I mean, I think, of course, yes.
So when we think about knowledge, we associate that very strongly with truth. So what we want from, you know, the things that we say we know is tell us what the world is like, mm-hmm. right? Tell us the true way the world is.
Yes.
Tell me, is this true or is it false? Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. Science doesn't really do that.
Okay.
Science is really, is not going to say, look, this is how the universe is. What science is more concerned with is, here's our theory about how the universe is. It works. It's consistent. Is it true? We don't know. So I'll give you an example. And this is where Occam's Razor.
So exactly what I was saying.
This is where Occam's Razor comes in. Gravity. All right. So I'm going to knock this pen off the table. It reliably fell to the floor.
Yes.
Science can tell you the theory of gravity, which describes why that pen fell to the floor, mm-hmm. right? It's because the mass of the Earth creates enough of a distortion in space-time that it draws, it's mutually attracted to that pen. Now the strength of the table is no longer holding that pen up from the Earth. Therefore, it fell to the floor, okay?
Right, and it's not a bunch of fairies that flew
That's right.
up into the air to catch
it. But it could be. But it could be. So I could say, well, yes, your theory of gravity seems very, you know, very elegant. But what I think is happening is every time I'm about to drop something, fairies rush in, grab it, and fly it down to the floor in a very consistent acceleration. They happen to always accelerate it at 9.8 meters per second squared, and they're just very reliable. Now, I'll try to catch them out sometimes and like surprise knock something over, but they're always ready. They are always ready. And the thing is that science can't really say that my explanation is completely untrue. Now, they would say there's not a good reason to believe that it's true.
They could do a bunch of tests. Can you imagine? Throw a bunch of money at this.
It's like, God damn, these fairies keep replicating our theory of gravity perfectly. But that's where Occam's Razor comes in, where we say, okay, your theory is really just the theory of gravity, and you've just replaced, and you just added fairies. So the law of parsimony, mm-hmm. or Occam's Razor, says that the simplest explanation, all things being equal, and that's the important thing. People are like, oh, the simplest explanation is always the right one. Well, no, it's not. If it doesn't account for all the data, or if it's inconsistent with the data, it's not the right one. Mm-hmm. But the fairies are an extra element that I've added to this with really no justification, right? I've never seen gravity fairies, okay? Not even in my dreams, no. Okay? So fairies or no fairies, we don't know. All we really care about in science is does it work? And that's really what they care about. They care that it works and produces reliable results. Mm-hmm. They don't care as much as we care about it, they don't care as much about is it really true? Mm-hmm. Because they have what they need. It works. Mm-hmm. Crazy, huh?
No, but I mean, I think that that makes sense. I think that
well,
you-
Of course
I think
it makes sense because I said it.
No, I think that doesn't everybody just kind of accept that that's probably true?
No, most people are going to not even, I mean, most people will be shocked to find out that science doesn't really care what the world is really like.
I don't really feel that's shocking.
Well, that's because you're well-educated.
Okay, so talk
that's
about...
Johnny Ringo is an educated man.
Talk about how... well, you're an atheist.
Yes.
And I'm an agnostic.
Yes.
Okay.
Fence sitter.
But that's the thing.
Is it?
Because I'm really allowing for it, because you're saying it's just not true. Right. There's just not.
That's correct.
You can't know that.
I can, actually.
How do you know that?
Well, I mean, you can know it as well as you know anything. So here's my test. Test number one. Is it true? Don't know. Test number two. Do I have a strong belief that it's true? No. Test number three. Do I have reasons to have a strong belief that it's true? No. In fact, I have reasons to have a strong belief that it's not true. Of course, you can then start messing around with the definition of God to mean like the whole universe, mm-hmm. and crap like that. I have no patience for that kind of pantheism.
But you don't know. But you don't know.
I have no patience for that.
That's the thing is that you don't know. And you can't say that you know. And taking the position that, no, you can say it, but you're speaking incorrectly then.
No, because I have a strong belief.
You believe that it is not true.
Of course. I also believe that the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. I can know that with as much certitude as I know almost anything else.
Okay, fair enough, but you can't know it full stop, and that's where I am, and that's why I'm an agnostic, and that's, we don't know what we don't know. You don't know that Jesus wasn't Jesus. Jesus was Jesus, but we don't know that he is the Christian Jesus, the Christ. We don't know that he was.
Well, look,
some people do. I don't know.
My religious beliefs do not depend on whether there was a son of a carpenter born in Galilee 2,000 years ago. I'm willing to believe that that guy existed, right? I just don't have any strong reason to believe that he was a deity. Because I don't believe in deities.
Okay. Any of them. But all right. So you don't believe, but you don't know.
So are you agnostic when it comes to Egyptian gods?
Let's say I'm agnostic towards every religion. Any religion is good as another. We know.
You can be agnostic.
From an archaeological, anthropological standpoint, that human beings create religions.
They do.
Create them. So I trust that science.
And you're right. You can be agnostic towards every deity ever conceived. Man.
I don't know. One might be better than the other. Who knows? Maybe we were really wrong at somewhere along the way to get rid of the pantheistic Egyptian religion.
Right. Do you believe in the deities as described in the Silmarillion by J.R.R. Tolkien?
I don't know.
You are not agnostic when it comes to Manwë.
You are not agnostic.
You are atheistic when it comes to Manwë.
No, how can I know that? I don't know that.
Oh, you don't live like that. You don't believe that even a little bit. See, that now you're just being contrary.
I mean, somebody has to be the devil's advocate.
They do.
But no, I'm telling you, what if I would say that? What if I did believe that? Because certainly
I would
somebody
laugh
does.
At you. It's
certainly
a book.
Somebody does. Certainly somebody does.
No, I don't think anybody. Maybe there are a couple of, you know, serious Tolkien fans who believe in Manwë.
I am telling you the things I have seen, Mark. I have seen people deify
singers,
normal human beings or whoever. I've seen that happen.
Right. Clapton is God.
And they really believe it. And you can't.
But that's just, that's a psychological problem, right? I mean, that's just.
Because it's just one person, but then what if it's 2 and 10
see,
and 50?
That's why for me, I have different standards for knowledge. And I know we argue about this all the time. My standards, I think, are pretty consistent philosophically. I don't hedge my bet. I say if there's no justifiable reason to believe in it, I don't believe in it. In fact, I disbelieve it.
Okay, but that's fine.
Is it though?
The fact is that you don't know.
Well, I mean, I can't have, you know, I can't be certain about any real piece of knowledge
in the entire universe. The only thing that you can be certain about in this equation is that you're certain that you don't know.
So Descartes tried to do this exact thing.
Uh-huh.
He's like, well, how can we know? How can we know whether God exists, or how can we know? And it was very big back then to try to prove the existence of God. In fact, it's one of my favorite areas of philosophy, ironically, where they try to prove God exists logically, right? With a philosophical argument.
Right.
They want to say, okay, look, I understand that you might disbelieve it because, you know, we found these scrolls in a cave somewhere. Okay, but now I'm going to prove to you God exists. And he starts with the very famous cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. You can't deceive me about that, because then you're deceiving someone. That someone is me. Okay, so I exist. And he starts from there, and then he tries to build an entire philosophy based on that one truth.
Mm-hmm.
And like, okay, in addition to thinking that I exist, what else can I say about myself? You know, I think, I observe, you know, all these things that, and he goes from there. Now, what he did try to build it from that exact starting point. Like, I know nothing. What do I really know?
But so I agree with that. The only thing you can know is that you don't know.
That's where we get into problems with definitions, because when we use the word know, we don't only mean ontological certitude.
Right. It's not necessarily right.
Right. We know that the Earth orbits the sun.
Uh-huh.
Right? We know it. Do we have ontological certitude? Well, no, because actually the Earth orbits a spot just off center from the sun. Right, because there's a lot of other planets involved. But whatever. So we generally accept the Earth revolves around the sun. We can say we know that. But we don't know it the same way we know I exist. So here's...
Well, that goes back to what you were saying before, though, about scientists. Like, it doesn't really matter if it's correct. Like,
right.
You know,
they want
it to be as close to it as possible. Right.
They do want to be able to describe the physical world. But what they mean by that is really, can we make predictions based on what we know? So I want to be able to describe the physical world, and I want to know what's going to happen to the moon in a million years.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that's what they're interested in is reliability, repeatability, practicality, things like that. They want to be able to do things with that knowledge. Now, we were talking about proofs of God. There's a really interesting one that I encourage everybody to read at least once. And it was St. Anselm's Ontological Proof of God. And it was really a very clever argument that basically said the definition of God leads necessarily to the existence of God. Pretty interesting, right? Just by the definition of God, we can know God exists. By definition, God is perfect, right? All-knowing, all good, eternal, infinitely powerful, etc., right? He is perfect. He contains all perfections. He is the perfect being. The definition of God being the most perfect being entails existence, because what's more perfect? A perfect God that's, you know, got all these perfections except he doesn't exist? Or the perfect God that has all these perfections and he exists. So his argument is that God's definition means he's the most perfect being possible.
Mm-hmm.
The most perfect being possible would also exist. Therefore, God exists just by definition.
It's a tidy little argument.
Isn't it? It's very clever. It's wrong, but it's very clever. That's why arguments for the existence of God and against them are the most interesting things for me in philosophy. It's because you get clever little things like that. And it really tests what do we mean by knowledge and how can we know things.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
I like it too. And it's a good place to stop.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, St. Anselm. You were wrong.
You were wrong, but wow, that was really interesting. Okay. Well, Mark, thank you very much for giving us this little...
That was a lot of Mark chatter there.
These are the days that I love. Yes. I got to ask the fun questions,
yes.
The funny ones and
by the way, don't at me, bro. It's been about 30 years since I took a philosophy class, and I may have gotten some things slightly wrong.
Well, we'll find out when we listen back.
I'm sure we will. And I'm sure that, you know, maybe Mike will go back and listen. He's like, bro, you were so wrong. I'm like, yeah, well, I sounded confident at least. The thing is, just say it confidently.
That's right.
That's the important thing.
I mean, who knows? They don't know.
Yeah, no, what do you guys know? Bunch of non-philosophers?
No, but they couldn't know because they don't know. No one knows anything.
Well, see, I'm not an extreme skeptic either. I don't think that's a very healthy state of mind.
All right. Well, everyone, please come and join us on our social media. I am at Serious Produce on Twitter, and Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. We have also a Gen Extemporaneous Twitter, which is Extemporaneous 2. We have a Facebook page at Gen Extemporaneous.
And I think we have a Patreon.
That we do. We talked about it in the
beginning. I know. Let's do it again.
www.patreon.com/GenExtemporaneous.
Yeah. Please come and join us there. We would love to share that content with you.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Wow.
Just want to point out that Christina is very demanding in her snack foods. I offered her some delicious brownie bites from Fresh Market, and she turned her nose up at them in favor of a Twix bar. Wow. Well, are we doing sound effects now, Miss? Miss, I control the board.
No, goddammit, that was a button error.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you were just making fun of my joke by going, oh, yeah, nice joke, crickets. Chirp, 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 chirp. That's all right. It's funnier that way.
I can't.
Are you going to be doing this on a regular basis?
I can't
just
believe that just
trolling
happened.
Me with crickets sounds?
No, but I should.